Good to see you all this morning. We're going to have Virginia Cumberbatch. She's going to open the scriptures for us. She's currently the Director of Diversity and Community Relations at UT, and I'm going to tell a quick story before she comes up. So we started Vox in 2006. Then in 2007, we started a community space. So at that time, it was Space 12, three blocks down. Now it's Vesper. And we had this dream. We recognized that Austin was changing at light speed, segregating faster than before, and then just dividing. We didn't really know what to do, but our hope was, man, if we could just get different people from different walks of life, different politics, if we could just get them in a room to humanize all these issues. And so 14 years, we tried everything. Pretty unsuccessfully, actually. And then this year, Virginia has an event called Front Porch. And it happened in this room. And there were people, new Austinites, new East Austinites, OG East Austinites, young, old, all in one room. And I remember standing in the back and thinking, Virginia just made my dream come true. Like, it's happening in this space. And so I'm really grateful for her, her voice. And so let's welcome her up this morning.
Well, thank you so much, Gideon. That was beyond generous and sweet. And I just want to say, first off, that it's an immense privilege to be invited to sit up here because it's a blessing every Sunday to sit amongst all of you guys. So it's, I just want to share, before I begin, what a blessing it's been to be a part of the Vox community. So I hope everyone has been enjoying this weather as much as I do, which is, you know, an annoyance to figure out what to wear. But I think in this season of Thanksgiving, we should be grateful for the opportunity to wear all four seasons in one day. And so I hope you guys are also experiencing it like I am. So today I'm inviting us to explore an idea, an action, a state of being, the art of neighboring. For a few seconds, I want you to reflect on your life and turn to the person next to you and share an image or a word that comes to mind when you think of the art of neighboring. So take a few seconds. All right, let's come back together. And I want you guys, kind of just popcorn style, to shout out an image or a word that you conjured when you thought about the idea of the art of neighboring. Just shout it out. Cookies, that's a good one. Sugar, trans fat, that is, yes. Friendly. Mr. Rogers. Anyone else want to share? Well, you must have been in my thoughts today. So while I was reflecting on what neighboring looks like to me, I was reminded of my favorite neighbor. You might have considered him yours as well. Fred Rogers to some, Mr. Rogers to most of us. Next week, the biopic of Fred Rogers comes out, starring Tom Hanks. But a year ago, I was struck by the release of an incredible Morgan Neville documentary about his life, the man behind one of the most transformative children's programs of all time. The documentary is called Won't You Be My Neighbor? And I invite you guys to watch the trailer real quick.
A television program for children made its unauspicious debut on station WQED in Pittsburgh. Its host, Fred Rogers.
Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
I want to tell you something.
What would you like to tell
me? I like you.
I like you, my dear. Thank you very much for telling me that.
You take all of the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite. You have Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Low production values, simple set, unlikely star. Yet, it worked.
Hello.
I've always felt that I didn't need to put on a funny hat or jump through the hoop to have a relationship with a child.
He was always trying to get a message across in every show.
A week on death.
What does assassination mean?
On divorce.
Some people get married and after a while they're so unhappy that they don't want to be married anymore.
He was radical. I know everyone says that, but he was radical.
They didn't want black people to come and swim in their swimming pools. By being on the program,
was a statement for Fred.
A neighborhood was a place where at times that you felt worried, scared, unsafe, would take care of you.
He had a singular vision of kindness and love.
Love is at the root of everything. All learning, all relationships, love or the lack of it. Children have very deep feelings, just the way everybody does. There must be times when you do feel blue. I'm not feeling blue right now, though.
Me neither.
Won't you be my neighbor? Well, I suppose it's an invitation. It's an invitation for somebody to be close to you. The greatest thing that we can do is to help somebody know that they're loved and capable of loving.
Won't you please, won't you please, please won't you be my neighbor?
Okay, who needs tissues? Well, as you can imagine, I bawled my way through the whole film when I saw it. And when the lights came on at the Alamo Draft House, there wasn't a dry eye in the theater. Everyone was clearly overcome by childhood memories and the lifelong lessons we learned from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And as I entered the crowded elevator returned to the parking garage, it was clear which folks had come from Will You Be My Neighbor. All you had to do was check for the folks with the far-off look in their eyes and the remnants of tears on their cheeks. And at one point in the elevator was closing, I made a brief eye contact with a gentleman. He looked to be about in his mid-40s. And noticing the far-off look in his eyes, I asked if he had just seen the Mr. Rogers documentary. Rather than simply replying yes or no, he looked in my eyes, and with great sincerity, he said, "We've forgotten what he taught us." The he was referring to was Fred Rogers. And as I reflected on that brief interaction in preparation for today, and that stranger's astute observation, I realized that I wholeheartedly agreed. We as a generation, as a country, as the human community, have indeed forgotten our first, perhaps our favorite neighbors and what he taught us. And I think the same could be said about what God has asked of us, what God has outlined for us, and what God has reminded us in Jeremiah. So I ask us today to consider, what does God ask of us in participating in the act of neighboring? Well, in Jeremiah 23, God reflects back to us what he's observed of us, of his people. He says, "Woe to the shepherds who destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture. Therefore, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel," which was in reference to the geographical area of the time, but we know of as the God of now, the God of all, "concerning the shepherds who shepherd my people, it is you who have scattered my flock and have driven them away, and you have not attended to them." Another way we might hear it is this: "I say to you who misled my people, you've scattered my sheep, you've driven them off, you haven't kept your eye on them." You haven't kept your eye on them. I sat with that a while this week, because even though God uses the shepherd metaphor here, I think he also speaks to the dynamic of the flock, the collective. In order for us to move to harmony, to maintain peace, the sheep must look after one another as well. So the question again I pose to us now is, have we lost the art of neighboring? Here I think God calls into focus our stumbling in keeping our covenant, to love one another and to take responsibility for one another. Our needs, our pains, our value as humans. God lovingly reminds us that we have been distracted from the covenant and that we have lost sight of the greatest mandate. We have been scattered. We have been driven apart. Such fragmentation, as we all know, only creates cultural division, perhaps social discord, but more importantly, it undermines our most critical calling as people of God, to be our brothers and our sisters' keepers, to be good neighbors. But somewhere along the way, we've each lost sight of what that means and what that looks like. Like the man in the elevator, we have forgotten what he taught us. We have prescribed a judgment of who is worthy of our love, of our care, our attention, our empathy. Just this last week, I was invited to attend a retreat in the middle of nowhere, Vermont. Now, I went to school in this area of Massachusetts called the Berkshires. So I was mentally prepared for the ungodly colds. I couldn't help but fear that this agreement to venture off to the middle of nowhere, Vermont, and take a shuttle with strangers from Boston Logan Airport, 3 hours away, was somehow signing up to be in the sequel of Get Out. I was relieved to find 3 other Black women on the bus when I arrived, who calmed my fears and who both shared through a grin and a chuckle that they had also told their loved ones to track their cell phones and promised to avoid any creepy women drinking tea. One of the women I had the great honor of being with that weekend was an incredible woman named Laricia Hawkins. Upon first meeting her, I was made aware that she was currently a political science and religion professor at UVA. But as I inquired a bit further, I learned that she also once taught at Wheaton College. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Wheaton is a well-established Christian university in Chicago, presumably a school that grounds its teaching pedagogy and philosophy around a particular theology. What Laricia didn't disclose at the time was that her transition from Wheaton to UVA wasn't her choice. She was actually asked to leave in response to what I believe was an incredible public expression of the art of neighboring. In 2015, Laricia Hawkins, the first Black woman to receive tenure at Wheaton College, made a symbolic gesture of support for Muslims in response to growing Islamophobia during the pre-2016 election. On Facebook, it's always Facebook, always, she announced that during Advent, she would wear a hijab for a week in solidarity with her Muslim sisters, an act she described as embodied solidarity. Inspired by a Catholic ideology she wanted to pursue, this concept of embodied solidarity, this idea of moving past the image of do-gooder or woke tweeting or missionary-driven check writing. So on December 10th, 2015, Hawkins wrote a Facebook post that would set in motion the end of her employment at Wheaton. The post was 11 paragraphs, and it announced her intention to wear a hijab throughout the season of Advent, a show of embodied solidarity. Now, to set the stage of this act or this response, 45 had recently called for a total ban on Muslims entering the United States. And a professor at Liberty University, I'm sorry, the president of Liberty University, had mused publicly about how looser concealed carry laws could help end those Muslims. She wrote, "I don't love my Muslim neighbor because she or he is American. I love my Muslim neighbor because she or he deserves the love by virtue of her or his human dignity. I stand in human solidarity with my Muslim neighbor because we are formed of the same primordial clay, descendants of the same cradle of humankind." The post ended with the words, "Shalom, my friends." A word that I've grown to use often, a word I not only heard spoken by my father throughout my childhood from the pulpit, but a word I saw lived out and embodied in all that he does. It means peace. Another definition is harmony or wholeness. Can you just let that sit with you a while? What would it look like if we were to move into this next week, into this next year, talking seriously about our part, our role in bringing shalom or peace or harmony or togetherness to our community? In the New York Times article entitled "The Professor Who Wore Hijab in Solidarity and Then Lost Her Job," the school's then president said it like this: "I believe in our fundamental unity in Jesus Christ, even in a time of profound difficulty that is dividing us and threatening to destroy us." Laricia's act of solidarity, her expression of the art of neighboring, calls to light that God's has asked us to tend to our community doesn't remark to extend a hand of hospitality or care or love or covering in moments of convenience or even spaces of commonality. The metaphor of sheep and shepherd is not used to demonstrate a flock mentality of sameness, but to offer up the image that we are all God's people, all worthy of respect, all recipients of unearned grace, all beneficiaries of God's greatest mandate, to love thy neighbor. Beyond mere tolerance of indifference, whether political, ideological, or religious, Dr. Hawkins' act of neighboring reminds us and invites us to join an embodied narrative of the actual as opposed to the theoretical idea of unity. Human solidarity as opposed to more the sentimentality of what it means and what it looks like to be neighbors. So like Dr. Hawkins, I invite us today to explore what it would look like to embody and practice the art of neighboring. Because it is in the act of neighboring that we honor God's call as offered in Jeremiah, to attend to his people. Today, I encourage us to begin to explore the parts of our life moving us to shalom, not moving us to neighboring, but to this idea of peace. How have our politics, social nurturing, cultural preferences opted us out of pursuing and protecting community peace and contributed to the scattering of our neighbors, leaving some people not attended to? So I ask again, have we lost the art of neighboring? And what is our responsibility in this art form? What should that look like? What does that look like for you here at Vox, in Austin, and in this world? God reminds us of what it shouldn't look like further in Jeremiah when he says, "So I will tend to you for your evil doings. Then I myself will gather the remnants of my flock out of all the lands where I have driven them, and I will bring them back to their fold, and they shall be fruitful and multiply." I reflect on that scripture like this, and I offer it to you as a consideration. As we as a city and country engage in emotional explorations of our mental health, our place in community, our place in society, and we wade through complex conversations about civil liberties, human rights, and justice, these not new, but these ever-critical conversations mandate our attention, our empathy, our learning, and our continued understanding. In fact, I believe the emergence of movements around gender equality, the protection of our bodies, police brutality, or the moral quandary of citizenship and nationhood, that this is a demonstration of how we need to grow. This is a demonstration of perhaps our withdrawal from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood's charter, and more critically, the biblical mandate outlined in Jeremiah. You see, this isn't just political or even ethical, it's biblical. Here, God outlines to us our greatest obligation on earth to be good stewards of our community, to be committed to bringing shalom, peace, to our spheres of influence, to be a good neighbor. But given our current state of cultural fragmentation, perhaps the art of neighboring will require much more than just our desire, much more than idealism or tepid social media engagement. It will require deliberate, selfless investment to shift our personal paradigms, our social practices, and sincerely care for everyone around us. Those we disagree with, and perhaps those we don't even understand. It may even mandate us stepping outside our normal roles, spaces of familiarity and comfort to support a position of love, equity, justice, and peace. And may I suggest that we all have different roles to play in this art of neighboring thing. For some of us, it's the work in our family. Perhaps that will start this Thursday. For others, it's here at Vox. And for many of us, it's the work that we do every day navigating this city. In some ways, my work keeps me accountable. My job title subscribes me to this professional ethos to care for those on the margins. But it does not mean that I too am not complicit, and I am not susceptible to blind spots that keep me from seeing wounded neighbors. Walking out the mandate that God reminds us of requires challenging my own unconscious judgments of who and who is not my neighbor. A few weeks ago, I did an interview on KVU to speak about a program we had just launched around housing equity. My communication team posted it on Facebook. Again, it's always Facebook. And a community member responded with this post. I was emailed a screenshot, and after I read the comment, I was shocked, unsettled, and yes, my ego, my innate community sensibilities were bruised. It wasn't specifically directed at me, but just the same, how could someone say that about our work, our programming? After reflecting, I had to interrogate the feeling that this gentleman expressed and the realities behind the comment. Were we truly seeing a specific narrative impacting our Latinx community members, or had our expression of equity unintentionally limited our purview of who our neighbor was? Have we sought out intentional partnerships and practices that recognize the nuanced pain of displacement and the trauma of the threat of immigration policy? Had we tended to the needs of all of our neighbors? It reminded me of this quote by what I consider a modern-day philosopher, Audre Lorde. She said, "I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own." So the truth was, in that moment, that housing equity could not be achieved until we had pursued the nuanced pain of how housing gentrification and policy had impacted our Latinx brothers and sisters in Central East Austin. Fred Rogers said it like this to us time and time again. "When I say it is you I like, I'm talking about the part of you that knows life is far more than anything you could ever see, hear, or touch. That deep part of you that allows you to stand for those things about which humankind cannot survive. Love that conquers hate, peace that rises triumph over war, and justice that proves more powerful than greed." And I imagine that is exactly what God is laying out for us in Jeremiah and what he's inviting us into this season. We can say peace on earth, we can sing about it, we can preach about it, we can pray about it, but if we have not internalized an understanding to make it happen inside of us, developed a posture that will move us to respond when the time arises, then it can't be so. So I invite us into a practice this week to reflect on what is your responsibility in the art of neighboring. What does it look like when we as a community here at Vox in Austin, the global church, no longer feel fear, dismayed, or missing? And as we move into a time of year that encourages reflection and gratefulness, I invite us to each sit with the areas of our life that God has lovingly challenged us in over the past year. As we continue to grapple with fractures understanding of community, I invite us all to explore what it looks like for us to participate in this act, in this art. Perhaps it is a challenge to each of us to engage beyond the tweet, sacrifice beyond the protests, move with a spirit of reconciliation and healing. Or for those of us who have remained silent, or perhaps apathetic or detached from our mandate to love our neighbor, when confronted with an opportunity to speak up, I invite you into a practice to empathize and support beyond your experiences or even your understanding. And this week, as we gather with family and friends, I encourage us to simply open our doors, open our hearts, and to see the stranger in HEB, care for your coworker, attune our ears to really hear that annoying cousin over turkey, and affirm the capacity in someone else to be loved, knowing that it is your calling to love them. And we round out this reminder later on in Jeremiah, with God saying, I will raise up shepherds over them, who will shepherd them, and they shall not fear any longer or be dismayed, nor shall any be missing, says the Lord. I think here God reassures us that he is co-laboring with us in this art of neighboring. We don't have to do this work alone. In fact, he offers that he will ensure we will not be dismayed, fractured, or missing. I don't know about you, but that gives me such encouragement to know that loving and caring for and interceding on behalf of the people around me is not just up to me, that I get to co-labor in this mission with my family, with you here at Vox, with my friends, with the larger church, and with God. It is such a relief. In essence, God reminds us that the art of neighboring is for us. Our shalom depends on it, but it's also carried out by us. Reconciliation, harmony, love, peace, connection only happen if we all do our part. When we assume this position to be good neighbors, in other words, it's FUBU. Now, who knows anything about FUBU? Well, for those of you who lived in a sad, sad existence in the late 90s and were unaware of this inspiration of these wonderful sweatshirts and unnaturally wide jeans, it was an urban lifestyle brand made popular by the likes of LL Cool J and Aaliyah. And then Amazon made some weird shipping mistake and somehow it ended up on these guys too. Don't understand it, not sure why that happened. I wish we could remove it from our historical narrative as a nation, but here we are. But the point is, FUBU was a brand that carried the ethos that this was a community thing. It was for the people, by the people. Just like God's offering of neighboring. It is for us and it is by us. So when we speak of neighboring, a passing of the peace in a sense, it is social, cultural, and spiritual, not just through the prism of evangelism that I believe can sometimes be divisive or perhaps harmful, but in the understanding that our greatest mandate is to seek, love, to seek and to love, and just as it's laid out in Jeremiah, to shepherd, to deal wisely, to execute justice and righteousness in the land. And when I read those words, I imagine a community that rises up to see our homeless community. And I say our, not the, but our homeless community that stands beside the falsely accused and that serves one another's deepest needs and wounds. And that's a photo. I think we're a little behind, but stands behind the falsely accused, and then this idea of serving our deepest needs and wounds. And this is a picture from the front porch that Gideon alluded to earlier that happened right here at Vox. I believe in the God who ordained us to reflect his love. I believe in the God who extends mercy and abundance. I trust the God who time and time again has saved us from ourselves. If these things are true, then the blueprint of neighboring should be clear. It should be pursued seriously, sincerely, and steadfastly by all of us. Perhaps it will be our willingness to be vulnerable, wrong, and open in this next year. Perhaps, like the neighborhood of Mr. Rogers, it is our willingness to trade in popularity of thought or position of comfort for the manifestation of love, equity, and justice for those around us. Our community's shalom, our country's healing, whether racial reckoning, social reparations, political repairing, demands the visible investment of us all, especially those of us who have benefited from such social inequity. It requires recalibrating who our neighbor is. Mr. Rogers understood that the personal and the collective road to true community would not allow us to remain in our safe silos, separated from spaces of difference, unfamiliarity, or even controversy. In fact, the art of neighboring would require courage to be challenged and perhaps even uncomfortable. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood helped young viewers understand their place in the world during cultural upheaval, when it would have been easy to demonize, blame, and separate the righteous from the unrighteous. Mr. Rogers instead forced viewers to tussle with the question Jesus himself was asked in the Gospel of Luke. Who is my neighbor? While the question felt different depending on the circumstances, Mr. Rogers' answer never wavered. His definition of neighbor was simply whoever happened to be with him at the moment, especially if they were in need. Each of us, no matter who we are or our experiences, has an opportunity to be more vocal, to be more aware, and to be more willing to use our resources, privilege, to dismantle the isms that separate us and create silos where there should be connection and community. Even in the age of social media and information exposure, we've created these silos, these echo chambers, where our ideas are reinforced and our circles of friends and peers mimic our own understanding of the world. Twitter, that darn Facebook, Instagram, the blogs we read are cherry-picked voices and images. While we have access to the world, we don't always meet the potential to create inclusive, loving spaces in our own daily life. Neighboring takes listening. Neighboring demands empathy. Neighboring requires understanding, and neighboring necessitates and offers love. Because every day, God extends us radical love and grace so that we can walk alongside our neighbor. Like Mr. Rogers, let God move you to a new season of understanding and assuming your role in the art of neighboring. So Vox, what does neighboring look like for you in 2020? What areas in your life have we allowed to be divisive or distant to keep us from one another? What spaces can we step into with more love and care and to affirm each of us? Who will you see and hear? Who will be your neighbor in this next season? And perhaps the opening song to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood can guide us through these questions. I'm going to read them to you first. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I have always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor? And now I invite you to begin to find a new posture that anchors your role in the art of neighboring. When we listen to my favorite neighbor offer us a kind reminder.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor? And so we're neighbors again today. I'm glad to be with you.